Welcome to the V&A Podcast, bringing you behind the scenes of the Victoria and Albert Museum, the world's greatest museum of art and design. I'm Glenn Adamson, head of research at the V&A. In this episode, we'll be talking about curating contemporary fashion at the museum. Once upon a time, the V&A was considered a pretty sleepy place. People used to call us the nation's attic. In the past 20 years, though, we have reestablished ourselves as the center of London's creative industries. Working with the world of fashion has been a big part of that transformation. Our exhibitions on Vivienne Westwood and Yohji Yamamoto, the British ball gown and Black British style, as well as our long-running Fashion in Motion catwalk show program, have attracted huge audiences and transformed the public perception of the museum. Here to discuss contemporary fashion at the V&A are Oriel Cullen, one of our specialist curators in this field, and Brick Smith-Start, who has been a London fashion icon since her days as a member of the British post-punk band The Fall. It has been said that already in the 1980s, Bricks dressed how every girl interested in looking good is dressing now. Today she runs her own fashion boutique brand, Start. So Bricks, let me ask you, why do you think fashion is so popular? Why does it get the attention of the public in the way that it does?
Okay, that is such a mega huge question, and there are so many answers to it. And really, it's like looking at a human body and trying to count the different veins. But for me, I mean, I really believe that fashion is a way that you express yourself and that you show your own personality through what you wear. And it's the first impressions that people see of you and how you express your creativity through the color, through the shape, through which designers you follow. And it just says so much about you. And it's also a very powerful tool that can change the way that you feel about yourself. You know, it can totally change your mood. So you have a low day, you put on hot pink, and you have a fabulous day.
I'm glad you mentioned creativity, because we always say that above all else, the V&A is a museum of creativity. And I guess you could say that fashion is the one way that everybody in the world gets to, almost has to be creative, because they have to put something on in the morning.
Well, that's exactly right. And you can really be whoever you want to be. But the wonderful thing about the V&A is that it's so historical, and there's so – I mean, fashion – but basically, you know, they say like nothing is created in a vacuum, right? It's all been there before. And fashion is never completely new. There's always a seed that has been planted from something that's gone before, starting with the caveman, okay? I mean, really, let's go back to the beginning. And so what's wonderful about the V&A is it houses so many eras of fashion that people take their inspiration from for now. And it's like just continuing the cycle. And it's like a library, you know, and you can always go back for referencing. And there's just so many things that you've missed before that can be totally now. It's amazing.
So, Oriel, you work in a fashion department with specialists in historic dress, but you're one of our specialists in contemporary fashion. So I'll ask you the same question. Why do you think fashion attracts such a huge interest from our public?
Well, I think the same as Briggs, that really everybody can relate to clothing. At a very basic level, everybody wears clothing. And it's really interesting to observe our visitors in the permanent fashion gallery, because it's a very mixed demographic. And I think the lovely thing is to hear what people say when they're in there, their reactions. You know, obviously we have people who are fashion students, people who have a real keen interest in the subject. But then there's often groups who have wandered in, you know, families, and it's lovely to hear their comments, because I think everybody feels it's valid to comment on it, because, you know, it's something they all wear and interact with. So whether it's, oh my goodness, that looks ridiculous, or wow, who would wear that, to, you know, people commenting on, oh, that's from this collection, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it has just a very wide appeal, really.
And what about the flip side? Is it difficult to put fashion in a museum? Because we think of fashion as something that's worn on the body. Obviously, the body moves. It's a way you experience the world. When you put it on a mannequin and it's still, do you lose something?
I think absolutely there is that factor that you do lose. Unlike something like metalwork or ceramics, which are much easier to keep for the long term, clothing is finite. You know, threads disintegrate, colours fade. And unfortunately, displaying fashion isn't the easiest thing to do. So there's a lot to take into consideration. But with that in mind, quite some time ago in 1999, Claire Wilcox, one of our curators, introduced the Fashion in Motion programme. And that was really to sort of counteract this idea of showing clothing on a still mannequin, to work with contemporary designers to bring in their contemporary work and show it on live models in the galleries.
So can you describe what this is like for people who have never been to one of these Fashion in Motion events?
Absolutely. The original idea was to bring in a small number of models. I think the first show was 6 Philip Tracy hats and 2 models. And the models wore these hats and wandered around the galleries, and people were sort of startled by these moving artifacts, in a sense. It was very popular. As the programme grew, the audiences grew, and it became incredibly busy, so we couldn't really have this meandering walk anymore. So it's now housed in a permanent gallery. And so it's become something of quite a big event. So we held it in the museum's Raphael Gallery, which is a beautiful cathedral-like space with wonderful Raphael cartoons. And we, we held a full show. We work with producers who produce London Fashion Week. And we invite a designer in to show a collection. We ask them not to show their last collection, which people can reference online and see, but something they haven't done before. So often they'll do a retrospective, or they might choose a theme from their collections do it that way. So it's free to the public, and they're just such an eager audience. And I think the designers really like that because it's a celebration of their creativity. And they're not facing critics, they're not thinking, how will this be received? And there's always a wonderful standing ovation at the end. So it's a popular program for us.
So it's almost like an industry catwalk show, but then it has this quality of being a museum event as well. And I suppose the natural question to ask you, Brix, is what do you think, as somebody from outside the museum, not a curator, but a keen observer of fashion, what do you think about fashion going into a museum?
Well, I think it's important to understand that when it is static on a mannequin, you're losing a dimension, because a lot of it is how it moves, how it flows. It's really quite difficult to get it right. So I think something like the catwalk shows are amazing because it opens it up to people that couldn't get into London Fashion Week and can actually see fashion in its full glory in all its dimensions, not just sitting there beautifully under lights, but actually living and breathing. And I think it's a wonderful thing, because when people go there, like you said, Oriel, it's not about critics. It's not about judging. It's about embracing this wonderful art. And I don't think there can be enough of it.
That suggests that one thing that a museum can do with fashion is make it more democratic. And I wonder what you think about that, Brix, because you're now running a boutique. You have this past in the music industry, and we know that music is a very powerful way of getting fashion ideas out there to the public. What do you think about fashion as an elite versus a kind of pop phenomenon?
I think there are different levels of fashion that people can relate to, and music as well. Like, I remember, let's talk about classical music, for instance. That's quite an elite music that a lot of people can't relate to, or they don't even know how to begin to figure out what they like, or even know what to ask for in a store, or they've just not been introduced to it, and they feel intimidated by that. And I think in terms of fashion, you get that as well with the high designer and couture. It's almost like out of people's league, and it really shouldn't be. Nobody should be afraid or intimidated by anything. All of it is, it's like eating the most delicious, fabulous, richest meal. All of it is to be able to be consumed by everybody, and should be, and it will just enrich everyone's life. So I know that these boundaries exist, but it's a wonderful place, the V&A, because it breaks them down and it just makes it accessible for everybody. So it's no longer intimidating, and you will go there and you will see things that you've never seen before, but you'll relate to them on some level.
Hmm. So, Oriel, how do you think about that distinction that Brix is making between couture on the one hand, this apparently elite phenomenon, and on the other hand, street style, a very accessible conception of fashion?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both very important, and they're both two areas that the V&A does address. But I think actually the reaction of people to seeing something that they wouldn't normally get to see or get up close to is fantastic. And we really, people respond well to that. We get a lot of feedback from our visitors and, you know, they enjoy seeing street style. But there is that feeling that, well, I can see that, I can buy that, I can wear it. But I like to come to the museum to see, you know, things that I never normally would have a chance to look at. So there is that, you know, that keeping that balance, making sure that you are sort of addressing both sides of things, but obviously giving people what they would like to see.
You know what? You know the David Bowie exhibition? That was like the most successful exhibition, wasn't it, ever? So that is really interesting to me because it combines music and fashion in such a way. And for me, David Bowie was around at the time when I was like in the cusp of puberty. So it was one of the most evocative times in my life and made a massive impression on me. So everything he ever did, everything he ever wore, I was completely influenced by it. And when I went to that exhibit and I would see like the Aladdin Sane knitwear thing or the Ashes to Ashes suit, I mean, it was incredible. It was incredible to see those up close. It was like almost like seeing the man, but even better in a weird way. And to see how tiny his waist was and how beautifully these things were put together and how innovative it was just amazing. And I think, yeah, fashion and music together is extremely powerful.
Mm. And bringing something to you in real life that you've only ever seen in a photograph or in a music video.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think with clothes, more than any other artifact, because they're worn on the body, and as Brick says, you can see the size of the waist. You know, you can see if somebody has left makeup on the collar.
Yeah.
even for us looking at historic clothing, you know, it's fantastic. You look inside a Regency dress, and you can often see, you know, the edge of where the sort of petticoat ended and the skin touched the side of the dress. So you can see the imprint of the body almost on the dresses. Sometimes, you know, there's a smell of perfume from a 1930s dress.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you touch these clothes that come in, because you get up close and personal, do you ever feel an energy coming from a different garment that, you know, from the person that wore it? Like, do you ever pick it up and just feel something?
I have to say it is. I've never had that jolt of electricity.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a sense, whether it's the style of the garment, sometimes they'll come in with accessories or a lot of the time we do know the provenance of something. But often you can be looking in the archives and you'll just know that something was from a particular donor because your eye, you know, gets accustomed to it. So it is interesting, people's different reactions. And I did once work with someone who wouldn't be alone at night in the store because, you know, they felt they were dead people's clothes. So, I mean, that's an interesting way of looking at it because not everybody has departed. But, you know, it is, there's something that is so personal about clothing. And I think there's, you know, so much evidence of the people who've worn the clothes.
Yeah, I mean, I find it really difficult when I go shopping for vintage clothes because I can feel the energy of the people that wore it, if it's a sad piece or a happy piece. And I just wondered, and, you know, some of the clothes that come to you have led extreme lives, you know, and you know some of the history. And I just wondered what it felt like to be around it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do feel very privileged, and it is wonderful to spend time with a garment, to look inside it, you know, to look at how it's finished. There are always clues to how it's been worn, you know, if somebody's customised. So definitely, you do get a sense of that when you're alone in a quiet space in a store, maybe two of you working on something. It is quite a special thing.
Yeah, because nothing brings that other person into the room more than their clothes, much more than a teapot or a chair could ever do.
Absolutely.
Because that was their identity. Yeah. That's what they put out there.
Yeah. So it's a collection not only about designers, but also about wearers. And that's very important, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think provenance, you know, the history of the item, who wore it, is very important to us. And I think also it's something that a lot of our visitors enjoy finding out about. It's wonderful for us when we know where the person bought the object or the item, why they bought it, where they wore it to. Often there's a photograph of them in the garment. So, you know, that's really wonderful to see. Or often they're very well-known people, but we have items that they were never photographed in, for instance. So it gives you another element of their character.
Bricks, when you go home and look at your closets, do you ever think about the fact that some of those pieces of clothing will end up in a museum someday or could end up in a museum?
Yes, I do. In fact, Oriel and I have had this discussion before. I actually archived a lot of my clothing from my days in the fall. Not all of it, sadly, but some of it. So I've got some original body map pieces, some ones that were specifically designed for me. I've got a Scott Crowler jacket. Lots of things I wore on stage where I've got the photograph of wearing them, things I picked up in the church, in the flea market. And then I've got the garment, you know, Anthony Price dresses, things like that.
So that's fantastic for us to have the full story.
Yeah. I mean, one of my idols is Iris Apfel, and, I only pray that one day I might be able to have a retrospective like hers, but I'm not sure. I think there are other people that are even greater collectors and, you know, have, I bet you like Katie Grant and Katie England, like the two Katies, will have like an amazing archive.
Well, I think it's interesting. People have become aware of how important their clothing is, which is great. In the last 20 years, a lot of people are now holding on to their garments and creating an archive, like you said, Briggs, which I think is fantastic, because previously, a lot of the time, and a lot of our donors in the past, they sort of gave away, you know, incredible amounts of their wardrobe. They just sort of, and occasionally donated to the museum, and it's very sad because you can never recapture that. Yeah. Although, you know, that's another interesting strand, the idea of the life of a piece of clothing. Currently, the Club to Catwalk exhibition, we have a fantastic dress on display by Willie Brown, a wonderful designer from the 80s, and it's sort of reminiscent of Russian constructivist style. And he actually sold that dress for £30 in the 1980s. And recently was walking down Brick Lane and saw the same dress on a stall for £30. So he bought it and very kindly donated it to the museum. And, you know, I love that sort of, there's often wonderful stories with pieces of clothing.
It had been out there in the wild.
And and what did it do, and who wore it, and what party did they go to, and what kind of life did they have? I mean, I find that so fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and fashion food chain.
Yeah.
Really.
And, you know, the chances of the designer walking by and seeing it then, you know, on the stall. It's
Can I ask you, Oriel, a little bit more about working with designers?
Yeah.
So one question I think that maybe people will have is, how do we choose who to work with, and also whether there are any ethical considerations that arise there? Because I suppose there's a fine line between celebrating someone's creativity and promoting their business, and we want to be doing definitely the first and not the second. So how do we kind of draw that line?
I think that's very important. And obviously there are sort of, you could always say by celebrating them, you are promoting them. But we're very clear about how we sort of work with designers. So there's a number of different levels. For instance, we have our big headline shows, our big exhibitions, but we also have events like Fashion in Motion. We have our talks, our evening talks program, which is very popular too. And then we have exhibitions which may feature elements of different designers. So as you mentioned, David Bowie, there are designers such as Paul Smith, Kanzai Yamamoto, you know, a big range of people featured in there. So really depending on many things, at any one time we're always in conversation with a number of designers. We stay we keep a clear eye on contemporary fashion. You know, we attend fashion weeks and things, and we sort of build up relationships with designers, sometimes through Fashion in Motion. And that will be something that we want to present to our audience, first and foremost, an interesting example of contemporary fashion. So that's where we start. We think about the audience, we think about the V&A, and what we want to do and what we know people will enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so we have a very varied programme for Fashion in Motion. So we might work with a big name designer for one event, and then emerging designers for another. So the key thing is to keep a varied content. You know, occasionally we are approached by designers or big companies who say, we want to do this, but we're not necessarily going to accept that. You know, we would say, well, how does this, you know, work? And if we feel it's something that's commercial or pushing something, we're not interested, because we want to see the cultural value in it. We want to see the creativity. We don't want to, you know, we're not really engaging in the business side of things. Mm. So it's something that we work very closely with our our colleagues in the museum, in our development department. You know, there's lots of rules and regulations that we have to ensure that we present a balanced view. And of course, the key thing is some designers love the museum, and that's really important. We approach a lot of different designers, and some designers don't love the museum. They don't know it and they don't really engage, and that's absolutely fine. It's not relevant to them. But a lot of them do. A lot of them come in to study the collections. A lot of them take inspiration from our collections. So that's great. You know, we enjoy working with them and they enjoy working with us.
I saw so many designers at the Club to Catwalk opening. There were so many, you know.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. I think we do have a lot of support, and so we're very lucky, because when we pick up the telephone and say we're calling from the V&A, we get, you know, a very good response on the whole, which is wonderful, because a lot of designers spent their student days studying in the museum or, you know, have referenced the archives. So
maybe we could finish by talking about London as a design capital in this industry, because, of course, the V&A is sitting here in London. We're a global museum, but a lot of the designers that you're talking about, Oriel, will be right down the street and will be coming to our galleries very frequently. Brix, what do you think is happening in fashion right at the moment in London? What kind of things are you seeing, and how do you think things are changing out there?
Well, I'm not sure I could generalize about exactly what I'm seeing, but what I feel is that London has always been a very fertile ground for planting the inspiration seed in fashion. And I think there's a freedom, like within, like, St. Martin's and all the London fashion schools, and there's just a freedom here that's not like Paris, which is very Paris, and not like Milan, certainly not like New York. And that I think people come here and they're allowed to express themselves. And I think this is where fashion inspiration germinates from. I really do. You know, I get asked this question a lot. Why is London Fashion Week different from all the others? And it's because of that. There's this creative freedom. And it may not be the, you know, as massive as Paris, and it will never be Paris, but this is really where it starts, and I'm sure of it. And it seems to start here on the street as well, and musically as well. And it all comes together in this one amazing city, and there's just something in the water. Mm. You know, there's some creative energy that brings all of it together. So, I mean, I can't tell you specifically what's happening, because there's so many different offshoots of what are happening. I mean, certainly there's a lot of great designers out there at the moment coming out of London. Obviously, massive people like Christopher Kane, who's, you know, really cracking through now in a big way globally, big, big, big. And then Erdem, who's just exquisite, who I know has spent one whole summer in the V&A at least, looking through all the archives and getting inspiration for collections and stuff. And, you know, there's so much going on here. It's almost too much to say.
So Brix is describing this cutting edge city, and I think we all feel that living here. Oriel, I suppose just as a last question, how do you think that a museum of the size and age of the V&A can work with that kind of energy? Because, you know, museums are big, big kind of freighters moving rather slowly through history and capturing it as it comes along. And fashion is so quick. So how does that relationship work?
I think it's actually quite complementary. I mean, the interesting thing about the museum is that since it started, it was collecting contemporary design. And that's, people often don't realise that, but the museum started out in the 19th century collecting examples of contemporary design. I mean, we are in the position as a museum is that the thing is, we're not predicting the future. So we're not trying to collect before it's been designed, in a sense. We have a bit of time to sit back and say, okay, you know, that's important. But at the same time, we are good at reactive collecting too. If there's a very key moment where something happens, or, you know, we feel something is important, we will acquire that too. So I think it's important to be informed and just to be aware of what's happening as much as possible. And, you know, to know your subject, also to know the collections in the museum, because you don't want to just collect out of the blue. It's a good idea to sort of collect things that are complementary. There might be a reason for collecting one outfit from somebody like Christopher Kane. You know, it might be you're looking at three outfits from his collection and you think, well, actually, this one ties in very nicely to a 19th century dress with very similar detailing. You know, so I think it's keeping aware of a bigger picture and always being ready to strike when you need to.
It's like merchandising a store, really. Yeah. Like, you have to just think about all the things that you already have and how it all fits together, but also be on the edge, on the cutting edge of what's happening and ready to go for the winners.
Yeah.
You know, do you have winners that you're backing, Oriel?
I do, but if I said that from a museum, I'd change the course of history.
I know you can't do that, but I'm just wondering, in your consciousness,
yes.
Do you have, like,
absolutely.
Names that you're clocking?
Absolutely,
okay,
yeah.
We'll talk later.
Yes.
Okay, guys, that's been a fantastic conversation and a great window into this world. It's so exciting, both outside the museum and, I suppose, from our perspective at the V&A, especially inside the museum. So, Brix and Oriel, thank you very much. Hope you've enjoyed listening, and also hope that you will join us again next time for another episode of the V&A podcast, taking you behind the scenes of the Victoria and Albert Museum, the world's greatest museum of art and design.